Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 48 degrees and overcast this morning. Today's Monday, October 10th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. There was no change in the outcome of the October 4th municipal election in Sitka following the counting of absentee ballots on Friday afternoon. Phyllis Hackett's lead over fellow write-in candidate Gary Paxton shrank by a few votes, but she remains the winner in the contest for the third assembly seat by 47 votes. Hackett is a one-term incumbent. She entered the race as a write-in after the close of the official filing period in August. At the time, only three candidates had filed for three open seats. Hackett has been a progressive voice on the assembly over the past 3 years, backing continued funding for nonprofits, among other causes. Nevertheless, she does not consider herself to be a left-leaning balance for an otherwise conservative assembly.
I'm pretty middle of the road, and even with the past assembly that we've been working with, I think we've worked really well together. I really find I work pretty well with most people and haven't had too many problems. I don't really feel like the minority. Aren't very many times that I get up and walk out being frustrated.
Hackett was the only candidate to attend Friday's absentee counting, which took place at Harrigan Centennial Hall. It took election judges Colleen Ingman, Sarah Peterson, and Dorothy Orbison a solid hour to process the 321 absentee ballots. A total of 241 write-in votes were cast by absentees, with 111 going to Hackett and 115 going to former municipal administrator Gary Paxton. Hackett will serve a one-year term on the assembly. She joins Mike Reif and Pete Esquiro, who will each serve three-year terms. Reif picked up 200 votes in absentee counting, Esquiro 189. A search and rescue team from Angoon rescued a Sitka crab fisherman whose boat rolled over and sank in Chatham Strait on Thursday. 59-year-old Peter Roddy was underway on his 42-foot crabber, the Jaeger, when the bow rolled and the stern went underwater. First Sergeant Charlie Hartzell is the village public safety officer in Angoon. He says Roddy had to act quickly.
Mr. Roddy stated that he had approximately 10 seconds to release and get into his life raft. After Mr. Roddy said after that he got into his life raft, the vessel actually rolled to its side and eventually sunk.
From his life raft, Roddy released smoke, which was spotted by a passing aircraft. The call for help came into Angoon around 11:50 a.m. on Thursday.
Angoon Search and Rescue was in the vicinity with our rescue craft. Mr. Roddy was transferred to Angoon Search and Rescue en route to Angoon, at which time he was taken to the Angoon Search Clinic and released with a clean bill of health.
Hartzell says visibility at the time of the rescue was 100%, with seas around 2 feet. The National Weather Service office in Juneau reports winds at 10 to 15 knots in the area at the time of the incident. An oil sheen approximately 1,500 yards by 100 yards was visible immediately after the sinking. A helicopter from Coast Guard Air Station Sitka performed an overflight on Friday to update that measurement. The City of Pelican is parting ways with Cake Tribal Corporation. The Lisianski Inlet community will acquire Cake Tribal's assets in town, which include a fuel dock and Pelican's electric utility. The city also will take control of the massive fish plant, which has been closed for years. The city foreclosed on it in 2010. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Pelican's mayor says under the deal reached with Cake Tribal Corporation, his city will pay $400,000 to acquire the fuel dock and the electric utility located in Pelican. It also will forgive the $71,000 redemption fee on the cold storage, which the city had foreclosed upon. City leadership says the hope in Pelican is that municipal ownership will prevent money from flowing out of the community.
This is as big as it gets for Pelican.
Clint Bean is Pelican's mayor. He says the deal isn't done yet. Both parties have signed off on it, but there are still regulatory hurdles to clear with the state.
Well, I think when it's done, it means that the city pretty much holds its future in its own hands.
And that, Bean says, is what his citizens have been hoping for, a chance to let the economy recover from the body blows it's received in recent years. The closure of the fish plant and cold storage took scores of jobs away from the community. The flume that brings water down to Pelican's hydro generator broke, and energy prices skyrocketed. In 1990, more than 200 people lived in Pelican. At the last census, the number was 88.
We can only improve from here, and that's the goal, is to get everything centralized, get everything on track, and strengthen our economy, and invite people, and get more visitors, and, you know, move forward. And I think this is the first of many steps in that moving forward.
The fish plant and cold storage will have a long way to go before becoming functional again. Its future is at least partly in the hands of the larger fishing economy. But the city received a grant for an ice machine that it hopes will bring some boats back. Pelican residents are still using diesel fuel instead of hydro for their electricity, but repairs continue on the flume and the utility's infrastructure. Once those are complete, officials hope energy prices will drop below the current level of 50 or 60 cents per kilowatt hour. Bean says the fuel dock, meanwhile, is Pelican's one stop for petroleum products.
Boat fuel, stove oil, and gasoline. And then you throw in propane, so pretty much anything and everything we use out here.
The city will buy the current fuel at inventory prices, not at the markup charged to customers, and will then be able to sell fuel citywide. It's a stream of income that Bean says is now flowing back into Pelican.
Any monies that were leaving the city are going to stay in the city, and thereby strengthening the local economy and enabling us to rebuild, reconstruct, and strengthen our infrastructure.
Cake Tribal Corporation did not return interview requests sent by phone and email in time for this story's deadline. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
A Juneau-based nonprofit that aims to curb the use of plastic shopping bags in the capital city won't be deterred by voters' rejection last week of a citizen's initiative to tax those bags at certain retailers. The group's director says the measure raised awareness of the pollution and environmental damage caused by plastic bags, and members will look for ways to keep the conversation going. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Turning the Tide's director, Dixie Belcher, wasn't surprised that voters rejected the group's plastic bag tax initiative by more than 2-1.
Plastic bags are either banned or taxed in 2/3 of the world, but that has never come from a vote. It has always come from a city council or from a legislature or, you know, from the country. When it goes out to a vote, it's always voted down.
Opposition came from people who disagreed with the structure of the tax, levied only on large stores like Fred Meyer, Walmart, and Safeway, with average annual gross sales of $15 million or more over the last 5 years. Most people thought the tax would be passed on to consumers.
I mean, there's a lot of people that just plain don't want a tax. And I think that they didn't like the fact that it would just apply to 4 stores. Which really wasn't our idea. That came from the business community.
Belcher says just having the measure on the ballot raised awareness of the pollution and environmental harm caused by plastic bags, especially on oceans. Turning the Tides regularly sponsors movies and speakers on the issue and gives away free reusable bags at events around town. Belcher hopes they can build on the momentum of the campaign.
I think we're going to be talking to teachers, to school teachers, with the possibility that some children can make bags in the schools, you know, that they could take home and their families would use. We're just going to continue to do that sort of thing and also try to reach people that we haven't reached.
That includes public officials and the business community.
There are definitely people in the business community that are 100% behind it, and there are definitely public officials that are interested, and I think we have some more now.
Randy Wanamaker, who was re-elected to the Assembly on Tuesday after a year-long absence, says he met a lot of people during the campaign who opposed the bag tax, but he says the same people were concerned about the city's ever-expanding landfill.
This is something that helped people talk about solid waste in the broad, strategic sense.
Belcher thinks some voters who opposed the tax would have supported a ban on plastic bags. While Turning the Tides probably won't attempt another citizens' initiative, she says it will continue to push for change on the grassroots level.
It's a huge problem, and I think plastic bags' days are numbered.
In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
A federal loan has been approved for the North End Ferry Authority to buy and renovate a vessel that can operate between Ketchikan, Wrangell, Kaufman Cove, and South Mitkoff Island. The funding of just under $3 million will come from the Department of Agriculture as a rural development loan. Alaska's congressional delegation announced the loan on Friday. Kent Miller, project manager for the Kaufman Cove-based authority, says that the authority is looking for a vessel to buy. He says $2.6 million is aimed at the purchase and renovation of a vessel. Much of the remaining money is targeted for two mini coaches that will operate on Prince of Wales and Mitkoff Islands, meeting ferry arrivals and departures. The power plant that heats and lights up the University of Alaska Fairbanks was estimated to last 50 years, and 47 years after it came online in 1964, it's become a source of worry for campus officials. The plant has experienced one near collapse and continues to have other maintenance issues. The estimated replacement cost is $200 million. Just $3 million of that for permitting and design work is in hand, and UA officials will ask the legislature for help. The soonest the project could be completed is 7 years, but a UA Board of Regents long-term plan calls for that to be pushed back by a decade. UA President Pat Gamble says when temperatures fall to 40 below, officials are going to be sweating. Residents of one of Alaska's most eroded villages are making steady progress, relocating to higher ground 9 miles away. The Yupik Eskimo village of Newtok is leading the seemingly impossible task of moving to the safer site called Murtarvik, which means getting water from the stream in Yupik. The community of 350 is located near Alaska's storm-battered western coast and is among the most vulnerable among scores of villages in the state affected by erosion and flooding blamed in part on rising temperatures. Newtok is the only community to begin the actual physical labor at a new site, a process that began in 2009. The work has steadily continued with yearly short-term funding from a variety of sources, including the federal and state governments. Zone weather today for Sitka calls for rain, locally windy, highs around 50. This is KCAW in Sitka.